Welcome to another episode of the Money and Business Hero podcast, where we talk about the three pillars of financial success: money mindset, money management, and money making. My name is Florian Fritz, and my guest today, Chet Hufford, grew up in the financial industry. He also has a strong background in athletics, nutrition, and performance psychology. So he brings a coaching mindset and the heart of a teacher to financial planning and investing. And he strives to both empower and educate his audience to not only become better investors, but to live more intentionally and create an abundant life. Welcome to the show, Chet. Great to have you here.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, please tell us more about all these things you've done. Finances, nutrition, psychology. How does all that come together?
How does it all fit together? Well, it's a great question. And my pathway into finance is a little bit interesting. My degree is actually in biochemistry. I went to school with the intent of being an endocrinologist or a surgeon. And then in my senior year, halfway through my senior year, I met the woman who's now my wife. We've been married for almost 18 years. We have six beautiful kids. And what I realized is what she wanted was a husband and a family, not a hotshot surgeon. So I had to really rethink what my plan was. I felt like I could be an excellent surgeon. I wanted to be an excellent husband and father. And I came to the realization I might not be able to do both. And I grew up in the financial industry, Florian, and I saw my dad impact the lives of people around him. I was telling this story yesterday. I remember growing up and him running into people at a grocery store and then thanking him. Steve, we're so grateful for all the wisdom and guidance over the years. We have a life that we never could have imagined. Thank you so much. So I saw the impact he had, but also he was at every t-ball game. He was at every basketball game. He took three-day weekends. We took a lot of vacations. I didn't appreciate that as much at the time, but when I was considering starting my life with this woman, I was thinking, that's the balance that I want. He was excellent in his profession in a way that was able to impact lives, to change not just the financial trajectory, but really change how people's experience played out in life. But he still was a great father, and he was around for us when we needed him most. And I took some time to really think and consider what my career path was going to be. So I took about 3 years off after graduating with a biochem degree. And I leaned on my athletic background. I started training athletes, actually had some military contracts, trained airborne soldiers before deployment, started working with some MMA fighters. And I never intended for that to be a long-term thing, but what it did is it reinforced the importance of habits and mindsets. Because when somebody is going off to war, doesn't matter what you know, when panic hits, you go to your basic level of training. When you work with an MMA fighter and they're in the middle of, you know, slowly being choked out, all the training in the world doesn't matter if you panic. So helping people to work through stressful situations was something that I kind of stumbled into a little bit. And in finance, I realized those skill sets are still absolutely essential. So here, how's this for timing, Florian? I started my career in the fall of 2007. That's when I opened my financial practice. You're laughing because you know where this is headed. I got licensed 2 weeks after the market peaked and started its gradual and not so gradual decline into the biggest market crash since the Great Depression. At the time, I had no idea, right? 2007, everything was still good. Real estate was hot, and then everything crashed. We entered the deepest recession in generations. I had a kid on the way, and it was not the best timing, but I saw the panic. I saw the fear. I saw very, very intelligent people making very foolish decisions because they were operating out of fear. They were operating out of the amygdala, right? The reactionary part of the brain rather than the logical thinking part of the brain. I thought, you know what? This is the stuff that we worked with athletes, with soldiers, how to recapture that logical part of the brain and push back against fear and anxiety so we can make good long-term decisions about the future rather than reacting to what's going on in the present. So that was kind of my pathway into taking performance coaching, performance psychology into the world of finance and combining the two. And I'm so grateful that I had that time in between to develop those skill sets and use that in an area that at the time seemed completely detached from finance, but I realize now is absolutely crucial for building the experience and skill sets necessary. And I've continued to work on that. We actually still work with a lot of law enforcement folks. And it's been a great adventure the last 17 years.
Wow, great. Yeah, I think, was it Mike Tyson who said everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So,
and that's the great part about planning too, is that it's dynamic. You know, the financial plan somebody has today, we kind of relate it to building a house. So when you build a house, you're going to come up with, you start with kind of an architectural rendering of what you want the house to look like, what you want it to do. And it's going to start out kind of basic, you know, it's about how big and how many rooms and how you want it to fit your family, those types of things. As you start building, that end goal will evolve. It will change. And the important part is having a blueprint that connects that long-term vision for what I'm doing today and how I'm building. And as that long-term vision gradually evolves and adapts, the blueprint does too. And I think in finance, it has to be the same way, because another quote, I believe it was Eisenhower, says no, Eisenhower Patton, General Patton, said no plan survives first contact with the enemy. And a financial equivalent might be no financial plan survives first contact with a recession or with life even, you know, because long-term goals always change, but then it's taking that long-term, how do we connect it to what I'm doing today? What can I do today to take a step forward to what I'm trying to accomplish 10, 15, 20 years from now?
Yeah. So how do you tell people probably most people come and say, I have 10,000, how do I invest them, right? How do you teach them how to plan instead of just looking for the next product?
We start with the end in mind. And what the financial industry boils down to, not the financial industry. Financial industry, unfortunately, is very, very product focused. I think it needs to be more planning and outcome focused, because money is a tool. It is not the goal. Money is a tool that allows us to build a life of more abundance and freedom and impact. That's what I believe money should be used for. But if we focus on money as the tool, I think we miss the point. So we try to flip it. And we ask people, well, what do you want your life to look like? What does a win look like? And we start developing this concept of a work optional lifestyle. We stopped even calling it retirement, because for a lot of the folks we work with, Florian, the traditional view of retirement, we kind of unplug from everything, kick back, play shuffleboard, and bingo, watch daytime television, wouldn't be good for the folks that we work with. They're just not wired that way. So we developed this concept of a work optional lifestyle, where regardless of whether you're still in your career, whether you start another one, maybe you're volunteering, maybe you're doing missions work, maybe just more involved with family, but you no longer need your paycheck to sustain your desired lifestyle, whether you still have it or not. And you could flip a switch and with your investments completely replace the amount of income you need to be comfortable, not survive, but to be comfortable. And we start with the end in mind. We ask people, what does that look like? If you were to quit your job tomorrow, how much income would you need showing up in your checking account every single month to sustain your lifestyle? And the other part of that question is, what do you want to look different about your life? What are the elements of your current life that you don't want to be there when you have the financial freedom? So maybe it isn't having the same job. Maybe it's you know, not having to get up so early. We work with a lot of oil field folks that are gone half the month working up on the North Slope. They get 40, 50 below plus wind chill. This is Fahrenheit. But you know, they're away from family. It's dark, like 22 hours of the day during certain parts of the year. So yeah, there's a lot of things they want to eliminate from their life. But we also ask, what do you want to add? If you didn't have to go to work every day, what would you want to add in your life that you don't have right now? Another way of asking that same question is, if you were to retire, what are you retiring to? Everybody knows what they're retiring from. What is it that you're retiring to? Because when you unplug from that, sorry, what was that?
That's a great question.
So when you unplug from your career, from your job, what are you plugging into? Because there's still got to be a meaningful pursuit. It still has to be something you're chasing. Otherwise, we're like a dog chasing a car. We retire, we hand in our keys, our badge, whatever, to our employer. We walk out the door. We've caught the car. Now what do we do with it? And a lot of people get kind of aimless. So I think if somebody is...
die like few years after retirement because of that.
And even if they don't die physically, what we've seen happen is people's souls start to die. Because they don't have a meaningful pursuit. They don't have anything that challenges them and stretches them. So when we're helping them plan, it's not just the financial piece. It's for what do they want their life to look like? And then we try to attach a number to that. How much income would it take every single month to build that lifestyle? And then we reverse engineer it. So we look at, okay, here's the amount of income you're going to need. And let's say somebody's 50 years old. They want to have a work optional lifestyle at 60. Okay, so we have a decade. We clarify where they need to be, where they're at now, and then we build a roadmap, a blueprint in between, so they can start connecting today's actions to the future of tomorrow. Does that answer the question?
Absolutely. I think that's a great way of doing it. And also, as you say yourself, you don't only have to give them the techniques to do it, what to do with the money, but you actually have to completely change their mind because people weren't thinking that way, right?
Exactly. So, and it's connecting the action today with the payoff tomorrow. And here's the tough thing about habits that I know I'm preaching to the choir here. You would understand this completely, but good habits typically have a short-term cost and a long-term payoff. Bad habits typically have a short-term payoff and a long-term cost. So my office is right next door to a McDonald's. We're in between a McDonald's and a Subway. I watch people making bad decisions all day long. But when you bite into that cheeseburger or to that fish fillet or into those crunchy fries, there is a short-term payoff. You get a dopamine hit right away. The long-term cost of eating that Big Mac or whatever meal it is, you don't feel it right away. You get the temporary pleasure, you pay the price in the long run. With good habits, like eating broccoli or getting up early and going for a run, there's a discomfort. You pay the cost up front. The benefit is enduring, but it's long term. And so that's one of the things that makes good habits hard to start is the immediate response is often negative. You're not getting an immediate benefit. So by connecting today's actions with a future payoff, what we're trying to do is, it sounds a little weird, it's almost like introducing somebody to their future self and trying to create a better relationship with the future version of them. They've never met the future version of them. They don't know that person. They don't know if they like that person or not. But when people are planning for the future, they're essentially paying the cost so their future selves can benefit. And the more tangible we can make that relationship, the easier it is to pay the price in the present for the payoff in the future. Does that make sense?
Totally, no, but very interesting. So how do you do that? How do you strengthen the relationship with your future self?
So I think it's a two-part process. And it all comes back to mindset, right? It's the idea of delayed gratification, the idea that I am willing to do something today that's hard and choose the hard right over the easy wrong. So the more clear that long-term payoff is, the easier it is to make the sacrifice today. So that's why we do talk about what it is. What do you want to retire to? What do you want that life to look like? And get them talking about that. Get them engaged. Sometimes people are just trying to survive today or survive until the weekend. And to get them to detach from that and think about 10, 15, 20 years from, like, what would be meaningful? Like, what do you, at the end of your life, what would make you proud? And those are questions a lot of people don't consider. So we try to make that end goal as tangible as possible and get them to envision that and make that vision real. And the other part of that is creating a tangible pathway. It's allowing them to take that big, huge goal and break it down into meaningful bite-sized chunks. So I'm just going to make up an example. Like, let's say, Florian, we talk about your goals and your desired future life. And we run the numbers and you're going to need about $2 million invested in order to have the financial independence that you desire. Well, if somebody is 45 years old, they have $500,000 invested, to make that jump from $500,000 to $2 million, that might seem overwhelming. And that seems like somebody else's problem. It doesn't seem like their issue. It's like, that's future Chad's problem, future Florian's problem. They've got to figure it out. I'm going to enjoy today, right? But if you take that, and I'm making up this scenario as I go. Let's say that means in order to get from where they are to where they need to be in a reasonable amount of time, they need to invest an additional $700 a month. Well, that still may be difficult, especially if they're already investing consistently, to find another $700 a month. But now it takes that long-term goal and it brings it into the present moment. Because if they've got to save $700 a month, now it's not just a future problem. Every day matters because they've got 30 days to save 20 something bucks a day towards that long-term goal. So it brings the importance into the moment, but it also makes it more palatable. They're not worried about $2 million. They're worried about how can I save an extra $700 this month? So that's just an example of how we might do that. And the other thing we try to remind people is whatever decision you make, a sacrifice is made. A lot of people think of sacrifice as doing something, giving up something today for something tomorrow. And it's usually a positive that they're gaining in the future. But some sacrifices aren't that way. We'll use that McDonald's example. If I walk across the street as soon as our conversation's over and I order a value meal, I'm making a sacrifice, but I'm sacrificing my future for the present. And we want to make sure people's sacrifices are the reverse, that they're willing to sacrifice a little bit of the present for an enduring future. But again, it's reminding people, regardless, every choice you make, a sacrifice is made. You're either sacrificing your future for the present or your present for the future. Which one do you want to do?
I like that. Thank you. So what habits do I need to build to be actually able to do that and follow through over those 10, 20, how many ever years?
Well, I think it's a continual process of aligning current actions with a future payoff, with future goals, and making sure those future goals are tangible, they're salient. And when somebody wants to do something that might not be part of their financial plan, we look at what is that cost. You know, so let's say they go out and they want to buy a new BMW or something like that. Like, oh, great. BMW makes a great car. I like nice cars. I'm not going to lie. But let's say that delays their work optional date by 2 years. Is it worth it? Is the hot, flashy car worth delaying their financial freedom by 2 years? Maybe it is. But it's getting them, again, to connect with that. And the habits that we try to instill, the mindsets we try to instill, are really resilience and perseverance. Resilience to be patient, to endure the current discomfort. I mean, right now, the market, the U.S. stock market has been down for a year and a half. It's uncomfortable, right? But to be able to endure that and see the future payoff. The other part of that is the perseverance, the continuing to do the difficult thing, whether that's paying down debt, investing in their retirement accounts. And as best we can, we try to get those processes automated to take the decision out of it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Because if I wake up every, July 1, August 1, the first every month, you have to make a decision to fund my retirement. Now there's an argument going on between my present and future self. But if that's automated, I don't have to think about it. It just happens. And if somebody's just starting this process, it might be difficult for a while, but pretty soon the habits get built. You don't miss that money anymore. And it might take a few months. I'm not, trying to steer your audience wrong. This is easy. Doing the right thing in the long run is almost never easy, but it can be simplified. And by automating some of those things, we take the decision away. Today, I'm fasting. And probably don't need to get into the reasons for all that, but there's a lot of really good short and long-term health benefits for fasting. But I didn't bring a lunch. I didn't pack food. I eliminated all those choices. I don't even have my wallet on me. I couldn't go across the street right now to buy lunch if I wanted to. I'm eliminating those hurdles by making the decision in advance. I don't have to worry about making a bad health decision because I've already made that choice. So I think when it comes to planning for the future, the more that we can automate that stuff, it makes the perseverance, it makes the resilience a little bit easier.
Okay, so set up your environment to make it easier to take the good
decision. Do the right thing.
To do the right thing. Okay, sounds great. So you can't go to McDonald's later.
I can't go to McDonald's, even if I wanted to.
Good for you. Good for you. Okay, so we create those habits. So we start with planning. We make a plan how we want the life to be, when we want to have the work optional day.
Yes.
Then we create habits to automate the way to get there. And everything you want to buy or do, you calculate the future implications of that, like buying a car or going on a family vacation or whatever. You calculate how much of my future does that cost me, or
yes, and it takes those decisions and builds them into that long-term strategy. And even the investment decisions, we make investment decisions based off long-term goals, not the other way around. The outcome should dictate our tactics, strategies, and the tools that we employ. Just think of somebody building a house. We've already used this metaphor a little bit, but I'm going to expand on it. You wouldn't want to go to a hardware store, a lumber store, and just start buying tools and materials, accumulate them in your yard, then start screwing boards together and hope this beautiful house comes out of it. Now, if you ever visit Anchorage, Alaska, there's places outside of Anchorage where it looks like that's how people built their houses. They just started putting pieces together and hoped a house came out of it. There's not a lot of building codes in certain areas, but if you wanted a beautiful financial house, you would start with the end in mind. And your blueprint, your strategy would dictate the tools and materials and the tactics that you employ. So even down to the basics of the mutual funds that somebody utilizes is built off of that long-term strategy. And that strategy continues to adapt. Again, I love your Mike Tyson quote. I use that a lot because the plan has to change. The plan has to evolve to stay relevant. And that does two things. Number one, it helps our current actions stay aligned with our future goals, but it also helps clarify what we want our future to look like. Planning is not a one and done thing. It's a constant process. Again, just like building that house, it'll go through a lot of revisions, a lot of refinements. And the closer we get to completing that financial house, the clearer we can see, okay, now I can envision myself living there. When you're pouring the foundation, it's hard to even imagine what the house is going to look like when it's done. But it's okay. You've got time to make changes. You've got time to make revisions. And then even when it's complete, somebody has a work optional lifestyle, they're financially independent, there's still maintenance, there's still repairs that have to be done to keep that financial house in working order. And it always comes back to the plan. The investments serve the plan, not the other way around.
Great. So in your experience, do people know what they actually want when you start planning with them?
No. And a lot of people have not thought about it. And again, that's why I use that metaphor of going to a hardware store, buying tools and materials, and then trying to figure out what they want to build. That's how most people invest. And we tell folks there's a huge difference between somebody who is strategically investing towards a desired outcome and somebody who's merely collecting investments. Now, here in America, most people aren't even collecting investments. They spend everything they make. They don't live within their means. They have too much debt. They're too impulsive. They just have a lot of bad financial habits. So it doesn't matter how good their investments are. They're not putting enough in there to make a difference. But for the people that are saving, a lot of those folks don't really have a clear strategy. They're just collecting tools and materials. They don't know how to fit it together, nor do they know if they even have the right tools and materials because they aren't super clear on what it is they're trying to build.
Okay, so good you work with them on that and create the right strategy. Now for you personally, how important is money for you, Chad?
Money for me is like I hope it is for my clients. It's a tool for me to build a life of more impact and freedom. And I grew up, my family was, we were always pretty well off. We didn't know it as kids. Our vacations were back to Iowa, where my family was. It was not Disneyland. We went a couple times, but it was seeing cornfields and things like that. We didn't do elaborate things, but we did meaningful things. And I didn't realize how my dad was leveraging money at the time. We live very frugally. So that's just kind of how I grew up. Also, with my mom, there was an issue, I think, of kind of a scarcity mindset. So both my parents were raised by Depression era parents. So my grandparents grew up in the Great Depression. But for my mom, it was bigger than that. So not only did my grandpa and grandma grow up in the Great Depression, my mom in her teens saw her dad, my grandfather, lose everything. He owned a dairy farm and an egg farm in South Dakota. And when she was a teenager, my grandfather went bankrupt. So not only did she hear the stories about her grandparents and what they went through in the Great Depression, she saw it firsthand. So I think that having an abundance mindset is very important. We make better decisions when we're focused on what we have rather than what we don't have. So for me, money is a way to facilitate that. But it can't be the end goal. It's about a meaningful life and really understanding what is meaningful to me and then using leverage to further that. Using money to leverage that impact and to be able to create that, not just for myself, but for others around me, and using it to bless others. And I got to tell you, it's been amazing. Like, what money can buy a lot of fun things, but one of the most entertaining and impactful things that money can do is seeing how it impacts the life of somebody else. And when you get to a place where you're not worried about your own finances, money is a tool that you can use to help others, the sense of freedom is amazing.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, you've basically answered my next question with this. What's your purpose for money?
So sorry, I didn't get it together. But yeah, it's a way to fund a life of abundance and impact. And I think this is really important in investing too, because I'll just give a very, very timely example. If you're looking at your investments right now, you open up your 401k statement or an IRA statement or a mutual fund statement, the value of those investments is probably less than it was a year and a half ago. If we're focused on just the investment, that can be very it can be very depressing. Like, oh my goodness, I've been saving all this time and I'm behind where I was a year and a half ago. But if we look at it a little bit differently, if we looked at those investments like an orchard, and I'm not so worried about the value of my orchard today. What I'm worried about is how much fruit can it produce over my lifetime? I can ignore the temporary because I'm not ever going to sell my trees. But what I want is to be able to build this orchard so it can produce fruit, not just for me and my family, but for the people around us. And if I have that viewpoint, it's easier to look past the moment because the money is not the goal. It's a tool that we use towards something bigger and even more important. It's not about the value of the trees. It's about the fruit they can produce and the sustenance it can provide for the people around us.
I love that metaphor with the orchard and the fruits. Thank you. Well, my last question, what is your best wealth building tip, Chet, for our audience?
I think it would be kind of what we already talked about is getting clear about what you want money to do for you. What is the job? Now, we talked a lot about long-term today, you know, retirement, financial independence. People have to know what is important to them. How much income do they need to feel financially independent? I don't remember who said this, but one of the best definitions of wealth that I've heard is what you feel you need minus what you have. There's a lot of people have a lot of wealth, but what they feel they need is up here. So they actually don't experience any freedom or independence. But if we knew what was really meaningful to us, then we can attach some financial goals to that. And sometimes those are going to be short-term too. So people sometimes will ask, you know, I've got some questions about investing and you know, maybe I just got an inheritance. I want to know what to do with that. And we always ask, well, what job does that money have? What does it need to do in your life? For some people, it might be part of their financial independence strategy, their work optional lifestyle. For some people, they might want to use that to buy a second home somewhere. For some people, it might be to fund their children's college. For some people, it might be a legacy they want to set up because their mother who left them that money loved the orchestra or something, and they want to set up a scholarship for music students. Who knows? But it's attaching an objective. It's attaching a goal. And a lot of people start with the tool and then try to find a goal they can accomplish. They start with the money. They start with the investment. Start with the objective. What do you need that money to do? And then reverse engineer the process. That would be my one takeaway. If somebody could remember anything from this, because all the habits, all the mindsets fall underneath that.
Awesome. Great. Thank you. Now, if anybody would like to reach out to you and ask you more or get your help, how could they find you?
Well, our website is veritasalaska.com. That's veritasalaska.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn. It's Chad Hufford. And again, it's Veritas Wealth Management. And we're happy to ask questions or to answer questions, involve people in discussion. I really appreciate you having me on. This has been a fun conversation and hopefully valuable to your audience.
Absolutely. I'm sure it was. Thank you so much for coming, Chad. And thank you, everyone, for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please don't forget to like and subscribe so you don't miss any of the next episodes. See you next time. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Money and Business Hero podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode and you got some value from it. Please take a moment to leave a rating or even better, a review. That helps awesome people like you to find the show and me to produce more and even better episodes. And don't forget to subscribe. If you want to get regular free tips, tools, techniques on how to build wealth and financial freedom, or simply how to improve your financial life in all three pillars of financial success, join my free Money Hero Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/moneyhero. Find the link in the description or find out more on the website moneyheroacademy.com. See you there.